I would like to talk more about the KdV equation, the Kartikeff-Defries equation. Let me start with a brief reminder of what I discussed last time, and then we'll just put it in somewhat different framework. So it is section 6 on Hamiltonian reformulation of the Euler equation. Essentially, what I'm going to discuss now goes along the following line, that it's known that more or less any problem in Riemannian geometry can be formulated in terms of symplectic geometry. It's just one has to pass from tangent bundle to cotangent bundle. That's kind of the idea behind the scene. So the geometric picture of what we discussed last time was as follows. So we had the Lie group G, and its tangent space at identity is the corresponding Lie algebra. Considered a vector, looked at geodesic with respect to some right invariant metric on that group. Doesn't look nice. And then pulled back the velocity vector at an arbitrary point to the identity. This way we just have evolution of the vector in the Lie algebra, and thus we get some dynamical system on, or in other words, the vector field on the Lie algebra. So, just as I mentioned, this Riemannian problem can be reformulated in terms of symplectic geometry. And for this, we will use the ingredient which actually defined the Riemannian metric on the manifold. Namely, I mentioned that we just fixed some quadratic form on the Lie algebra. That's exactly the quadratic form which we extended later on, say, with the help of right translations to the whole Lie group. It was defined with the help of the inertia operator A that mapped the Lie algebra G to its dual. Now, if you have here a dynamical system on the Lie algebra, then on the dual, we have the image under this inertia operator. So there will be, this way, one sees that a system arises on the dual space, which is just the same system as on the Lie algebra, but now it will be in the dual variables. So this inertia operator stands the Euler equation describing the geodesics. And I just wrote this in some somewhat general form. V dot equals some nonlinear operation on V. So that's the equation here, which describes how the velocity vector evolves to some dynamical system on the dual space up here. It turns out that the image under the inertia operator of this dynamical system in the dual space will have some additional properties. Namely, it will be a Hamiltonian equation. On the dual space G star. So when I say that something is a Hamiltonian system, again, there are two ingredients involved. One of them is that I have to say what is the Hamiltonian function, Hamiltonian, and the other, what kind of structure we have. So let me first mention this, and then I'll go in slightly more detail. So the Hamiltonian function will be just the same energy that we considered before, but we considered the energy on the tangent space to the group. Now we'll consider it on the cotangent, in other words, on G star. So with Hamiltonian function, that is just the energy. Now I would like to write this energy in terms of the dual variables. Let me just to specify the notations. So this will be the image AV under the inertia iterator of this vector V, and I will denote this by M. So the energy then will be 1/2 of V comma AV, as I wrote last time, but now, so this is the same thing as V comma AV. Okay. So this is just the same energy function, but written on the dual space. This is essentially the Legendre transform of the corresponding quadratic form. Now, and the corresponding Poisson structure will be given by the Poisson Lie bracket on the dual space. Now, a few words about that. So, once I say that we have some Poisson structure, it actually means the following, that we have some manifold and functions on this manifold, then there exists some Bellini operation on these functions, which satisfy some identities, namely the Jacobi identity and the Leibniz identity. So this operation, so in other words, it turns the space of functions into a Lie algebra with some additional property, namely the Leibniz property. But I will need just a very explicit formulation of this bracket. So there is a bilinear operation on functions on the dual space. So F and G are, say, smooth functions on G star, and M is just a point in G star. Then by definition, the bracket of such functions at the point M has the following value. I just have to take, so if I have, say, here a Lie algebra G and the dual space G star. Yeah. Yes. Exactly, yeah. So that's exactly the case.
So, but we haven't seen A yet, but we're seeing it
right here. Right, so, yeah. So, that's, so the, I would like to define some bracket, some iteration on functions on the dual space. So I take two smooth functions on G star. Take a point M. So I would like to specify what is the bracket of these functions, what is the number, new function at the point M. And it will be equal to the following. I take differential of a function f and regard this as an element of the dual to the dual space. In other words, it will be an element of the Lie algebra itself. Now, if I do the same thing with g, it also will be regarded as an element of the Lie algebra itself. So in other words, differentials of functions on the dual space will be just vectors here. So of course, I take all of them at the point m. After that, the only reasonable thing to do with these two vectors in the Lie algebra is to take their bracket. That's exactly the operation given downstairs over here. So this is the Lie bracket, and we'll get a new vector, a new element of the Lie algebra. And now let us pair this with point M, which is in the dual space. That's called the Lie Poisson bracket, or Kirillov-Koston bracket. Has many names. Essentially, it is linear in M, so that's why we have a quadratic Hamiltonian, but a linear bracket. So the equation essentially will be quadratic. And what else to say? One more way to think about any Poisson bracket is as follows. It is not an operation on functions, but it is an operation which stands, so a remark is that any Poisson structure on a manifold essentially can be thought of as, so is a map from, so from functions on this manifold to vector fields on this manifold. Namely, given a function, we construct the corresponding Hamiltonian vector field. So if we have a function f, we associate to this some vector field V, which has the following property. If we take the Poisson bracket with f of any function, Poisson bracket on M, on any manifold M, is G star. Yeah, so for us, then the Poisson bracket is essentially some gadget which makes from a function the corresponding vector field, namely such that if we consider just an operation of taking bracket with this given function, it is the same as just take lead derivative with respect to this vector field. It is an operation, a differential operator of the first order. That's why it must be a v-derivative with respect to the vector field. It again satisfies some identities, namely Poisson bracket of functions will be mapped to commutator of two vector fields. But just think of this way. So given a function, we immediately can find the corresponding vector field. Of course, it can be found explicitly in our case because we consider a very specific Poisson bracket. In particular, again, for Poisson brackets can be described by the union of symplectic leaves. I will not use this, at least for most of the lecture, but for specialists, I would like to mention that symplectic leaves of the Lie Poisson bracket are quadrant orbits in the space G star. In particular, it implies that any Hamiltonian equation is tangent to symplectic leaves, so it is tangent to quadrant orbits, and thus quadrant invariants are invariants of the corresponding Euler equation. So probably just I'll give two examples. For SO3, this statement, yeah, so in particular, there exists an invariant foliation for any Euler equation. So an example here, if you take Euler top, then this is the three-dimensional space of all symmetric matrices on the dual space. The dual space is the space of all momenta, and the foliation that I'm speaking about here means that we have a conserved fixed absolute value of the momentum norm. The letter M is overloaded here. The momentum, can I call it anywhere else by me? T? P. Oh, P. Okay. Good. In the dual space. So just it will be, instead of M, it will be P. Actually, I could put the M small. Just P is here. For S diff, for the group of volume preserving diffeomorphisms, the fixed momenta or fixed symplectic leaf means that we have diffeomorphic fields with diffeomorphic curl of V. That's why I just would like to relate it to what I mentioned last time about variational principle for stationary flows, that we consider it quadrant orbit that was essentially the orbit of either vertex fields. In other words, the fields with diffeomorphic vorticity. Exactly, yeah. So I abused the notation slightly here. So instead of... So just let's keep one of the arguments here open. I just... Okay. 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 More precisely, what I mean here is that whenever you write a bracket, you can write that this is a pairing of a bivector field. So P is a bivector field. Two vectors, and you take linear combinations of pairs of vectors that of two products of pairs of vectors. DF, DG. In other words, this is GIJ, GF over DXI, DG over DXJ. So this is the two tensor over here. Cij is the polyvector field, bivector field. Now you just keep one of the arguments open. So think of this as just a differential operator. Do not fix g, fix only f. This way you get a map from functions to vector fields.
Could be a map from
pairs of functions to the real. Yes, that's how it is defined, for instance, over here. Once we have a pair of functions, then we get just a number, which or at a given point, or a function over G star. Yes. Yeah. It's true, yeah. So I always consider just so-called smooth duals.
Dense subspace.
Yeah, it's again, and when we say that it's dense, I would have to specify in which topology. So I just consider smooth duals, so those that are represented by smooth functions. Yeah. So of course, actually, description, the full description of quadrant orbits here is... So it's a wild problem. For instance, classification of all quadrant orbits for volume preserving diffeomorphisms in three-dimensional space includes classification of all knots. So if you imagine just a vorticity which is supported on a curve, it is a knot, and essentially it includes classification of all knots up to a diffeomorphism, so up to isotopy, as we call it, right? So these knots, they constitute very tiny, so to say, singular orbits in among huge orbits, much bigger ones, but still, I mean, the problem, of course, is unsolvable. Anyway, so what I'm leading to, in some sense, just forget about this. We have reformulation of the Euler equation. Now, what is the Euler equation? I just said that it is a Hamiltonian equation with given energy and given bracket. But this is enough data to write explicitly what it is. And this can be taken as a new definition of the Euler equation. So explicitly, the Euler equation on a Lie algebra has the following form. M dot equals odd star operator at the point M, where we are acting by A inverse of M. So here we would like to calculate what the vector field, what the vector at this point M is. So for this purpose, we take A inverse of M. So it is exactly the vector V we started with. And then we act on this point M by means of the quadrant action, which means essentially just the change of variables. So imagine that you have a vector V and consider one parameter family of group elements, just one parameter subgroup, and conjugate by, if you think in terms of matrix group, for instance, conjugate by the corresponding matrices and then take the infinitesimal vector of this motion. I'm going to do this in example, but to show what all notations here are. Just a very small remark that this equation is good for left invariant matrix. If you remember, yesterday I mentioned that we had in some cases left invariant matrix, in some cases right invariant matrix. essentially for all diffeomorphism we consider eigenvariant metrics. So in that case, for eigenvariant metrics we'll get an extra minus here. Yes, yeah, right. Now, yeah, yes. Exactly, yeah.
So what defines the Euler equation as a quadratic function?
Yeah, so so of course there is in some sense more room in this definition just because we can take any Hamiltonian function with the same Lie-Poisson bracket and then the equation will look slightly differently. So more generally, for any function h on g star, the Euler equation is m dot equals at star m, and here I'll just have to put dh at this point m. That's the only difference. So in particular, if h is of this form, of course, its differential is just a inverse of m. This is an immediate consequence, just one line consequence of this formula. But of course, I could do this calculation here, but instead I'll do something else which is almost the same thing, but for some specific example. So that's more general case, and now h can be a cubic function, whatever, in particular, but then it does not have this interpretation as a geodesic equation. Of course, for geodesic property, we would have to start with some Riemannian metric, and then it would lead to a quadratic Hamiltonian function. Again, for a specialist, just the relation of a Riemannian geometry problem and symplectic problem is as follows. If you would like to consider a geodesic flow, it lives in the tangent bundle, right? So, of course, it preserves the velocity vector preserves its length during the flow. So when we consider a Riemannian metric, it identifies the tangent bundle and cotangent bundle. So that Riemannian metric is given by the operator A, the inertia operator. So this way we have actually a flow in the cotangent bundle, and the Hamiltonian function, instead of this one, we actually have so-called A-canal equation, just P squared. In the cotangent bundle, at every cotangent space, we have just function p squared, the square of the norm. And then it's known that if you consider characteristic of the corresponding hypersurfaces, p squared equals constant, then they will be projected to the geodesics on the manifold itself. So it's exactly what happens here, with the only exception that since we have right invariance in the problem, then instead of just describing anything in the cotangent bundle, we can do it at one cotangent space, and we have chosen G star. And so after this reformulation, that's exactly what we are led to, just this equation. Now, I would like to be less abstract and specify some data, namely, so this was section 6, now 7. I would like to talk about the Virasoro algebra, some specific algebra and group, and the Kertész-Defries equation. So first of all, I would like to define what the Virasoro algebra is. Definition. So Virasoro algebra is a one-dimensional extension of the Lie algebra of vector fields on the circle. Just imagine that you have vector fields, you have a circle, vector fields there, and one can take the commutator of them. This is the Lie algebra. The essentially commutator is just infinitesimal version of taking composition of different morphisms. So this vector fields on the circle, but this is not enough. I would like to add just one extra parameter. So think of this as depth of the fluid, right? Now, just keep in mind the number. Now I would like to describe what is the commutator in this new algebra. I extended this. Smooth vector field. Of course, yeah, tangent vector field.
So I can characterize them by
the number. No. They are not incompressible. They are all vector fields. No, by function. Why? Why by number?
Yeah, by a function. By
So it is an extension, one-dimensional extension of vector fields, which is given by the following commutator relation. So it is V of S, just a function. But just to remember that this is actually a vector field, I will keep this notation. So D actually stands for d of dx, okay? So x is a parameter on the circle. I have chosen one parameter and we'll fix it. So now, I'll keep in mind, so this is a real number, and I would like to define commutator between such pairs. So by definition, such a commutator is, again, a pair, which consists of vector field and a number. The vector field is just commutator of these two vector fields, and to keep proper signs, it is VWX plus VXW, and this is, as I said, vector field. Now, the number has a special name. It's called the Gelfand-Fuchs Tuca cycle, and is equal to the integral over the circle of the second derivative of V times the first derivative of W. So this is what's called Gelfand-Fuchs Tuca cycle. Make a note that the result of the commutation does not depend on A and B, which means that A and B lie in the center of this Lie algebra. They commute with everything, and that's why it's called a central extension. I will not cite this, but it is a central extension, and it is a universal central extension. In some sense, all other extensions can be described by means of this one. We would like also... This Lie algebra, it is an infinitesimal algebra. So in principle, it has a Lie group. However, it is the case here, there exists a Lie group which is called the Virasoro group. And only one can write explicit formula. And again, the cycle would be given by special Bode formula. What I will need is just that there exists such a group. And one can think of that. I should think of that as just a group of diffeomorphisms of the circle, which is extended by means of one parameter. That's all. So keep in mind the number, and otherwise it is just a diffeomorphism. Now the theorem. That we put this. Valentin Avsyenko quite a while ago. It was in 87. The Euler equation of the geodesics on this Virasoro group with respect to the L2 metric is nothing but the Kartikeff de Vries equation. So, of geodesics. Virasoro group with respect to right invariant optometric. Just a second. L2 metric is the Kartikeff de Vries equation which has the following explicit form. So the t derivative, I think I wrote t derivative last time, is, you see, I have all possible notations. I used dot over here. Last time I used d of dt. Now I would like just to use the index t here, just for the sake of the other couple of cases that I will consider. I could, of course, put. So the equation is minus 3 ux. This coefficient could be renormalized. I just would like to keep it this way. And plus a u x x, where a is just a parameter. Yeah, you asked me. Yeah, it is direct product. Topologically, it is just a direct product. No. If it were just zero over here, indeed we would consider just zero, or just the addition group on reals and the group of different fusions here. But this is a non-trivial extension. It means that a trivial extension without fancy words means the following, that after some change of variables, you can reduce the commutator relation to the following. It will be just commutator on the first the first component and zero on the second. Of course, it will be a central extension, right? If you just put zero here instead of the Gilfand-Fuchs-Tucker cycle. Still, it satisfies the Jacobi identity. I did not. There is some multiplication. It's more complicated. As I mentioned, it uses the formula found by Bott, but I will not need this. Okay. Yeah. It's everything on the circle. Yeah. So it was from the very beginning. Now I'm working for periodic. This is a periodic KdV. Thank you. So, of course, it is just an evolution equation on the periodic function, right? So u depends on x periodically and on time. So, or, which is the same, the KdV equation is Hamiltonian. I'm just using this dictionary over here. It's Hamiltonian on the Virasoro dual with the L2 energy as a Hamiltonian function. It's Hamiltonian. This is just this statement. So this was kind of a definition, if you wish, but also a statement that some geodesic problem in the spirit of last lecture can be described in this form, right? So there is some statement here inside, and I'm just using this to translate this fact from Riemannian geometry on infinite dimensional space into a Poisson geometry, also in infinite dimensional space. A remark. Of course.
So, to say that this one is a case of that, could you, for me who doesn't understand this quite, give us what is A?
What I would like to do is just to give explicitly, in some sense, the proof of this, so that you would see all the, that's kind of the main purpose of this. And then you will see that there is no kind of mystery in the statement, just a rather simple calculation. That's why I wanted to have all the formulas that I need on the blackboard. Now, yep. Actually, in some sense it is. But probably I would have to use V here instead of A, right? Okay, let me use the same, somehow later I will use A. I used C at some point, but then, call it C? Okay. Yeah.
you have to differentiate geodetic flow leads to Hamiltonian equation.
Exactly, yeah.
This is Hamiltonian equation. So if I go back, I'm gonna get some geodetic flow.
But it is a geodetic. This, if you just forget about the second line, it says that the Euler equation of the geodetics on the Virasoro group. So you have a huge group, right? Infinite-dimensional group of diffeomorphisms. Consider the L2 metric on the identity. This means that we just take integral of V squared, such a quadratic form on vector fields, just L2 norm. Consider then right invariant metric. It looks a little bit weird at the moment. So we consider right invariant metric. On this infinite-dimensional space, consider geodesics. So we actually, what is the space? The space of diffeomorphisms of a circle, and also we keep in mind a number, right? So we have some geodesics, then we pull back the velocity vector, calculate something, see how it, what is the dynamics of this vector. It turns out that the equation that we come up with is this equation. Now, what I said before is just to say that I don't need to prove to you the statement. It was one calculation was done once and for all. So it is essentially in the same Arnold's paper. Just once you have a remaining, well, probably in a later paper. But anyway, it is the statement that if you have some Riemannian problem like that, namely the problem of geodesics, but with respect to one-sided invariant metric, then it can be translated into some Hamiltonian language. So there is some this relation that this is the same as this equation over here. This is some statement which is valid for all Lie groups. After that, we just need to show something in this form, and then it automatically will mean that we have some geodetic flow in infinite dimensional on some Lie group. If I prove something in the Hamiltonian language, then automatically, just because of that identity valid for all Lie groups, it will be true for the corresponding Riemannian interpretation. Okay? Now, I just would like to mention that actually there is a little bit more hidden here. Namely, one can modify it slightly and consider H1 matrix and, for instance, H1 homogeneous matrix, H1 dot, that is called. Namely, consider not only L2 metric on the function, on the vector field, but also on its derivative, right? And then it will be so-called H1 metric in the Sobolev sense. So this way one gets some other equations, namely, similarly, the Kamasa-Holm equation has the following form, ut minus utxx equals minus 3 uux plus 2 ux uxx plus u u x x x and plus some coefficient times the third derivative of u. This was done by Missiolik, so he showed that the Kamasa-Holm equation is again the geodetic flow on the Virasoro group with respect to H1 metric. So it is geodetic on Virasoro with respect to H1 metric. This was done by Missiolik. And you're right. It consists of two components, and one of the components is just fixed. I could add here some, where it is? Here, the equation that C dot equals zero. Then it would be indeed the honest equation of the Virasoro. And now, in this form, actually, oh, sorry, don't do it, but T. Now, use the notation, right? So now it means that the C is just a constant and doesn't evolve in time. And altogether, it gives me indeed some evolution on the whole Virasoro algebra. But, and it also shows that indeed central extension was very substantial there, because without it, I would, of course, not get this third derivative term. And then the equation that remains here would be just a Hopf equation, and it's a Burgers equation, whatever you call it, and it has completely different analytic properties. It admits shock waves and so on. So KdV equation is much nicer for any smooth initial data, L2. It goes for all T's. Yeah, of course. I mean, just forget about it. It will be the Burgers equation. But with Laplacian, it will be a non-conservative system, so it cannot be described as geodetic flow. The geodetic flow conserves something, and burgers, the honest burgers, loses energy. Right? So, now, one more equation to mention, just because, again, it is... A friend of mine once said that she found a very nice kind of advertising suggestion, just buy a left shoe and get the right shoe free. So that's something like that. So once you have already Kamasa-Holm equation, then why wouldn't you just mention Hunter-Saxton equation? It is just another equation in the same hierarchy as the Haridim equation. And it is just the difference of the KdV and Kamasa-Holm. So it is UTXX equals minus 2 UX minus UXXX. So this corresponds to H1 dot norm. And this was done jointly by Misiolik and myself, and it turns out to be already on slightly different space on the homogeneous, on the quotient of the Virasoro group modular rotation. But it's similar, so it is Misiolik myself. Now, I would like to do this calculation and explain all the notions involved. So, I just need that form. Kamasa-Holm without dot, yeah. No. It turns out that they have some additional property to be bi-Hamiltonian, and I'm not sure that now I will... Actually, I plan to talk about bi-Hamiltonian properties, and we'll see. All of them are bi-Hamiltonian, and the other Poisson structure, bi-Hamiltonian means that they are Hamiltonian with respect to two different Poisson structures. One of them is always Poisson-Lie, because it is always Hamiltonian with respect to Poisson-Lie structure, if it is an Euler equation. And the other is so-called constant, not constant, but constant Poisson structure on the Lie algebra dual. Okay, so hopefully I'll at least have some time to mention this. Now, proof. Constant is a structure, sometimes another name for this Poisson-Lie bracket. Sometimes it's called Kirillov constant. Or KK bracket. But I'm saying that there is one more bracket on the dual space, actually, which already depends on several choices, on some choices. It's just constant. Yes. It's not always the case with Euler equations. They always are Hamiltonian with respect to Kirillov-Constant bracket, but not always bi-Hamiltonian. In particular, the standard hydrodynamics is highly non-integrable, while bi-Hamiltonian property means that this is a very regular or integrable system. Now, let me return to the proof. So, first of all, let's fix notation. So, the Virasoro algebra for us will be the space of pairs. For some reason, I denote this by pairs V of X, D, and B. And there it was A. Sorry for this, but let me use this notation. Now, so this is the Virasoro algebra, which is the space of pairs. And the Virasoro dual space also will be the space of pairs. Of course, so dual space to functions, so I consider only smooth duals, also will be represented by functions. So let me call them U of X. Now, what are the objects that are due to vector fields? It's not right to think that these are differential forms. Because, for instance, if you have vector field, then one form, of course, can be paired with the vector field, but then you'll get a number at every point of your manifold, right? But we actually have a function when we pair a vector field and a form. But we need to get a number, an element of the dual space is the linear function on vector field. That's why actually the elements here will be quadratic differentials. So that when we pair them together of this object and that object, we'll get just the integral of v of x, u of x, v of x, u of x. And this d of dx will cancel out with one of these dx's and the other remains. And so we will be able to integrate over the remaining dx over the manifold. So the elements are correct differentials. It's just a matter of kind of fixing dimensions. And A will be a number which will be dual to that. So the pairing altogether will be AB, right? So these are elements dual to this one. So we would like to find the odd star operator. That's our goal, the next goal at least. So for this, I have to recall what is an operator in a definition of the adjoint operator. So for instance, we have V, D, B. So whenever I put this way, of course, I mean that V depends on X. And here U, DX squared. So just to emphasize where the objects are. So this is the dual operator. So this is quadrant operator, which has, so to say, two arguments. One of them is an element in the Lie algebra and the other in the dual space. So altogether, this will be an element in the dual space. So we have to pair this with a vector field. So just, if you forget about this for a while, let me just write here what it is. So this is an element of the dual space, and I would like to pair this with add V D B, right? And here it should be W D C. So we have some operator in the Lie algebra. So it associates to a given this is just a linear operator in the Lie algebra associated to VDB, to some particular choice of a Lie algebra element. And now it gives me again some element of the Lie algebra which can be paired with the dual, with some dual element. This is just definition of a star operator for add. Now, add is just another notation for the commutator. And I have the formula over there. V, V, D, D, commutator with W, D, C. In other words, we have a commutator. It's called the add operator or adjoint operator in the Lie algebra. We are looking for its dual. Of course, for this, I just have to substitute the. So this is just that was definition of add star operator. That equal sign, equality sign. Now, I'll just open the commutator brackets. This will be u dx squared a, and instead of writing this, I'll just use the notation then minus vwx plus vxw d, and here it will be the integral of vxxw x dx. So this is a number, this is vector field. This is just definition the commutator. Now, what is the pairing? The pairing is just written over there. I have to multiply u by this parenthesis. So it is u times minus vwx plus vxw and plus a times this expression. Dx. So this is just definition of pairing. Now, let's just integrate by parts, because to get the definition of a star operator, I need in the pure form W and C. We do not have any C here, but we do have W. So I would like to get rid of any derivatives on W. That's why I integrate by parts. I would like to get rid of this derivative, for instance, on W, just by putting the derivative on U and V. Then the result is, so W will be pure, and then we have VXU plus VU X derivative minus A VXXX. You see, on W you had just one derivative here, so I'll just put the derivative here with the change of sign. So the result is the following. So this is the pairing of the following expression. It is 2uv x plus uxv minus avxxx dx squared, which is paired with what? It must be paired with W, D, and C. Since we do not have any C in this expression, I'll just put here 0. So the outcome is that what I have here is nothing but the definition of R star. So this is R star V D B U D X squared A. There is no, where is B? Right, so here, right? So if you, again, sorry for, so it corresponds to A and B over here, and they are not present in the commutator. Right, so there is nothing. I just quoted that, sorry for the confusion. Probably, actually, it can be easily fixed by just changing the definition here to B and C, because nothing depends on them. This way it will be literally what I wrote over there. And then this would allow me to change that C back to B over there. Anyway. So this is just definition of R star. What does it have to do with the Euler equation? It turns out that we are already almost there. The only thing that remains for us is to find A inverse. Look, we have a star operator. The only thing that we don't know yet is A inverse. But A is just, it produces the L2 norm, right? It is the L2 energy. So for the L2 energy, the inertia operator which tends Pirasora algebra to its dual is, so to say, identity because it has to produce the L2 norm, so V multiplied by V itself, right? On the other hand, the other V should be understood in the dual language. In other words, A will be sending V, D, B, such a pair, to pair where we have the same function V of X, but written as the quadratic differential. It's just a matter of notation, but it will be the same coefficient, the same very function in the coordinate X. And here, again, it will be B. So In other words, we just have to plug in to the equation V equals U, just because, so this is the dual, the outside operator where you have V and U present, right? But now, instead of V, I would have to put here, this must be A inverse of U. But A is just identity, so I just have to plug in V equals U and A equals B. And then the equation that M dot equals minus, since I have a right invariant metric, R star A inverse of M applied to M is the following equation. So I have an evolution of two things, U and A. Okay, let me still write it as second differential probability. So U dx squared and what else? A dot equals, so now I just substitute this U equals V, it will be 2 U UX, right? I just put, instead of V, I put U, plus UXU minus A UXXX dx squared 0. Now you recognize that this is nothing but the KdV equation because it tells you that ut, the derivative, so u depends, this is a function, is 3 u, oh sorry, I missed minus sign, this minus over here. So it is minus 3 u ux, and with this minus gives me plus a u xxx. And now the key point, I replace a by c, right? Sorry for this. Turned out to be a there. So this is nothing but the KdV equation. The other part is that A is 0. So let me just make a remark. Unfortunately, don't have time for this. But this is not only a Hamiltonian equation. So the outcome is that the KdV indeed is the Euler equation, and the calculation is essentially this. It is just some algebraic manipulation with commutator and finding the dual operator. That's it. Of course, it is more complicated when one considers the H1 metric because the identity operator must be replaced by 1 minus Laplacian, more or less. So it's more complicated, indeed. The funny point here is that turns out that the KdV equation, Kamasa-Hollman, Hunter-Saxton, are by Hamiltonian systems. It turns out that this immediately allows one to produce an infinite sequence of conservation laws. So infinitely many conservation laws. Actually, I was planning to just show how to do it, but let me estimate how much time I need for this. But we will miss cookies. Probably I need 10 minutes for this. I don't know whether I could extrapolate your patience for. Okay. So this remark then will be renamed into section 8. And again, let me give you a very general piece of Poisson geometry, namely, if you have a manifold and two Poisson brackets on the same manifold, then there is the following definition. Suppose that we have two different Poisson brackets, two Poisson structures on a manifold, but now I will not overload the letter M. Let me call this N. But there's the following very special property, that if you take a linear combination of these two, so we define a one-parameter family of these bilinear operations. This is again a Poisson bracket for Poisson structure for any lambda. Actually, it is enough to have just for one lambda, for lambda non-zero and not infinity. For lambda infinity, it becomes just this bracket, and for lambda equals zero, it becomes this bracket. So in this case, this is a very special situation, and such Poisson structures are called compatible. Or another name is that they form a Poisson pair. Then there is a nice way to generate. So suppose that it happened that we have a vector field, a dynamical system, which simultaneously turned out to be Poisson with respect to two different Poisson structures that in addition have this property, that they form a Poisson pair. It turns out that once it happened, yeah, with different Hamiltonian functions, but with respect to two different Poisson structures. It turns out that then there is an infinite sequence of conservation laws for this very dynamical systems, or so infinitely many first integrals. And also, you can generate infinitely many other dynamical systems which commute with this one, and all of them will be pairwise commuting. And the proof is simpler than formulate the result. Nice thing. So, let me kind of do it simultaneously. I'm rather saying that there is a sequence of Hamiltonian functions, an infinite sequence of Hamiltonian functions, and so let me kind of it's exactly the case where it's probably easier when we just go through some very simple calculation and then you'll realize what it is. So let H lambda be so-called Casimir function. I will explain a Casimir function for this lambda bracket. In other words, this H lambda gives you zero with any function f on the manifold. For example, so that you understand what I'm speaking about. Just imagine that you have R3 and the bracket, which looks like this, df over dx, dg over dy, minus df over dy, dg over dx. So this is the space with coordinates x, y, z. So this bracket depends only on x and y. Then z will be Casimir. Actually, symplectic leaves of this bracket will be just parallel planes z equal constant. And Casimir just parameterizes the corresponding symplectic leaves. So I'm just taking such a function for the Poisson bracket lambda. Of course, if it is non-degenerate, it never exists, but usually, in all problems, they are degenerate. For instance, in the Lie algebra, the invariant of quadrant action any invariant of quadrant action is a Casimir function. So once you have this, we expand H lambda into a series in lambda. So here Hj are functions on the manifold. And then theorem is the following, that functions H lambda, Hj, the coefficients of this Casimir function, the coefficients in the expansion in lambda of this Casimir function are exactly those Hamiltonians I was speaking about. So they have the following nice property. So these are Hamiltonians of a hierarchy of bi-Hamiltonian systems, namely H sub J generates a vector field. So it is a vector field with respect to the first bracket, and it is Hamiltonian also with respect to the zeroth bracket. Namely, this Aj, as I mentioned, so what does it mean that this generates Hamiltonian field? It means that the Poisson bracket is any function, it is just the Lie derivative of this corresponding Hamiltonian field of this function. And it is equal to minus the next Hamiltonian function with the same function f, but with respect to the zeroth bracket, if this is the first one. You see this Hamiltonian field, this Hamiltonian, because this is the definition of Hamiltonian function with respect to the first bracket, it turns out to be simultaneously Hamiltonian with the next Hamiltonian function with respect to the zeroth bracket. This is definition of one Hamiltonian function, the same field, but another Hamiltonian here. And this is the first definition, right? So that's the statement, and the claim is shorter than the statement. The proof is shorter than the statement, namely, it is just a matter of definition. So this is for NF. It's just, what is H lambda F? This must be zero. Oh, sorry, I didn't write it. It was with respect to the lambda bracket, because it was Casimir function for the case lambda. And lambda bracket, by definition, means that we have, so first of all, H lambda is H naught plus lambda H1 plus lambda squared H2, and so on, with F. This was the zeroth bracket, plus lambda, and then we just repeat the same thing. But with respect to the first bracket. This is just by definition. I didn't do anything here. And now if you combine the terms, then for lambda naught, you'll see that H naught with any function f with respect to the zeroth bracket is zero, right? We have only no lambda, we have only in this term. No surprise, because lambda equals zero corresponds to the zeroth bracket, and H naught will be the Casimir. But a lambda 1 will give us H naught, H1 f with respect to zeroth bracket plus H naught f with respect to the first bracket, then it must be zero. So this is true for any lambda, right? So this must be zero, and it's exactly this identity for j equal 1. Then for lambda squared, it will be H2 f plus H1 f 1 equals 0, and so on. So this is as required. So in other words, we have, if this is H0, this is H1, this is H2, and so on. So we have now a way to generate the sequence of functions. The only thing that remains to check is that why we have that, for instance, H3 and H5, with respect to, say, the zeros bracket, will be zero. Why they all commute? More generally, hi, hj, with respect to, say, 0 or 1, equal to 0. But just because of these identities, this is nothing but the integral of h4, h5, with respect to the first bracket, up to a minus sign. And then this is the same as h4 with h4, with respect to the zeros bracket. Now I lower this, so in other words, I just, if I have two different functions here, I'll just get one of them closer by changing the bracket, and then another one I'm making closer, changing the bracket. Finally, I'll get to the bracket of a function with itself, which is automatically zero. So this proves the involutivity property, how it is called. So the resume is that once we have a Poisson pair, or a compatible Poisson bracket, there is a way to generate an infinite number of conservation laws, and for the Kratilek de Vries equation, we have to start with some Casimir, and this is nothing but exactly how it is used in the scattering method. It's a logarithm of the trace of the monodromy operator over the circle. So you just have to take d squared plus u minus lambda squared, and it has a nice expansion, and then you read off as coefficients of this expansion exactly the conservation laws of the KdV equation. It is related to the Casimir function for the Virasoro algebra, for which I do not have time already. Yeah.
As a result, that's the KdV, that's called Lennard recursion formula. I think that was, yeah. I understand that's the original place, that's the, he was the original one found the example, first example.
I thought that this lacks, I think that this scheme is due to Magri, more or less. There are various places where it is written, but this kind of, I think that this simplest exposition, that is just expansion of a Casimir function, is due to Magri.
Right. In the case of KdV, I think it came from
Lennard. Yeah, it's called Lennard scheme, yeah. But nobody ever refers to any paper by Lennard, but it's called Lennard scheme, yeah, it's true. It's not clear that it doesn't stop somewhere. It's true, yeah. For KdV it works just because one can see that the degree of h grows. Yeah. You had some questions?
This is on S1.
Yes.
The corresponding scheme
of the work on the line? As far as this algebraic part is concerned, so you can imagine that on the line, because of the decaying coefficients, you have like the periodic case where you have to fix that there is a zero somewhere with high order, infinite order, for instance. And then the same is true. So it is like a subspace in this periodic case. This algebraic scheme works for the line as well. And also, I didn't tell you for the KdV what is the zero structure. I just mentioned one of them. This is, but I just mentioned that it is a constant bracket, so if those people who are interested, I can describe. So let me just also give you the reference. For the Kamasa-Holm KdV and this general point of view for all three equations is described in our paper with Missy Olek that appeared in Advances this year. And also it can be found on my webpage. In the University of Toronto, and about the Euler equation, I think I'll have some notes later on, and also on my webpage one can find some information about this. Now we can only hope that some cookies still left.